Right. Okay, Howard, and then Freddie.
I think Freddie was first, Adam.
You're all right, Howard. On you go. So I'm not in a rush.
Okay. No, just a couple of pieces of information. Add Swansea to the places where the leaflet has been distributed. You gave that list of places where the leaflet has been given out. And thanks very much for the very interesting for the whistle stop tour of the various sort of left groups. Knew some of them, didn't know all of them. I thought I was quite good on that. So it might be worth sort of, you know, putting that on paper somewhere, maybe in an article in the Standard. I think there's material there for something like that.
Is that what you've got to say? Okay.
I was going to say something else, but perhaps a bit later. Okay, because it isn't sort of directly relevant to the kind of thing you've been saying. Okay.
Okay, Freddie.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Listen, like Howard, Howard's actually expressed almost to a T what I was going to express, that I thought that was very, very interesting, some of the information that you were given tonight. And whilst I was aware of some of it, I certainly wasn't aware of it all. And if something like that could be put down in an article for the Standard, I think it would be extremely worthwhile. So, in effect, Howard's already expressed the views that I have there. I do have some other thoughts, but I mean, I can come back to that in due course. But I certainly thought it was very worthwhile, and I think it'd be a good article for the Stand-Up. Thank you.
Okay, I expect it will be. It'll be an article anyway. Right, Andy.
Thanks, Adam. And again, you know, I echo what other people have said. Thanks for stepping up at the last minute. You never let anybody down. You always play a blinder on these occasions. But it is a question, really, for you, Adam, because, I mean, you have a lot of experience and knowledge. And it's something that I think about from time to time. In terms of the sort of views of left wing people now, you know, in the here and now, which to me it seems that people who might be minded to you know, take a left wing point of view, shall we say, or you know, as they may term it, to be some sort of socialistic point of view, not necessarily an SPG point of view, but some of what people would think of as a commonsensical sort of definition of being socialist or socialistic would be, and how that has shifted in the past decades. And I'm thinking particularly, given all the references to Trotskyists and so on, how that has shifted since the end of the Cold War, the end of the 1980s, and the collapse of the Soviet Union, where since then, really, we've also had, you know, in the Western developed capitalist countries, you know, the decline of maybe not in all of them, but definitely in the UK, the decline of the trade union movement, and this rise of a sort of identity politics that the left has latched onto to fill the gap. And I just wondered if you have any thoughts on that, really. So it's probably more than one question, but yeah, as I say, you have a lot of experience and a broad sweep of knowledge. So, yeah, but thanks for the talk, Adam. I found that very interesting.
I'm afraid that my laptop died. I didn't hear what your I didn't hear what your question was.
Okay, sorry, Adam. Was it because you literally didn't hear it, or you just
no? I didn't think.
Do you think I just rambled on and didn't?
No. My screen died, and I had to go switch on to the wall and
switch
on again.
Oh, right.
You check them out. Anyway, I didn't hear what you said. I heard what you said at the beginning, I heard what you said at the end, but not what your specific question was.
Oh gosh, Chair, is it okay if I just summarise what I asked Adam to talk on?
I'm the chair.
Oh, you are the chair. Okay, is that okay then, Adam? If I just... Yeah, what I was basically getting at was that it seems as though the people that the left appeal to, the sort of value, not values, but the sort of the views that the left now appeal to are very different to the views that that the left would have appealed to prior to the end of the Cold War, and that oh, I'm getting a bit muddled now, sorry. And really that the left as a concept has changed since the end of the the Soviet Union, and it seems as though they had very little purchase really to rely on, other than to and again also with the decline of the trade unions, certainly in the UK and other parts of Europe, they've lost a lot of the left as a sort of a force in politics has lost a lot of its purchase. And so it sort of resorted to things like, identity politics and so on, and moved away from a sort of a collectivist sort of working class position. So I'll stop there because I've said enough, really. I'm sorry that you didn't hear some of what I said. So I'll stop there. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Well, I mean, I've been in some of the meetings and also handed out leaflets outside. And the thing I notice is the age composition of the people attending these meetings. I mean, more than half of them appear to be pensioners. So these are people who are from the old left, rather than being, Corbynistas. They're probably ex-militant tendency people or ex-Communist Party people. So I mean, that so they might stick to those traditional views of what socialism is, in their view, or for far as we're concerned, some sort of state capitalism. Where I think the younger people have they'd be more attracted by by the Green Party, which doesn't have this word, which is a problem for us as well, of course, socialism. And the people, the people that meeting in Chelmsford have said that the word socialism would put people off. So the Green Party is advocating more or less the same reforms as this new party is likely to advocate. Tax the rich, take the water companies and so on back into public ownership. And of course they're even more woke. I mean, they're so woke that they never go to sleep in the Green Party. So people who think like that, I think, are going to be more attracted to the Green Party than to the New Party. In fact, have already voted with their feet. Most of the younger people that I've noticed at their meetings have in fact been the members of these Trotskyist groups, which is surprising anyway, that they're still recruiting young people. So yeah, I think you're right. You do have a point about the left and the word socialism meaning something different to well, the word left meaning something different today than what it meant in the 80s and 90s. And this identity politics is more what the Green Party is into. Anyway, I see there's lots of people queuing up. I think Kumran, you're the first, and then Darren, and then Mike.
Hi, Adam. It's good to hear from you. I've dragged my friend Steve along. You can see him in the chat. He's not a member of Platypus, but a sympathizer. So I just thought you should know that. So I have a question about, I think you said at the end, like socialism is not of the left, if correct me if I'm wrong. So I wonder how you characterize, like, the classical period of Marxism, let's say from, I don't know, the kind of late 19th century to maybe the early 20th century. How do you conceive of, the various gradations, like, say, you know, the Eisenachers and the Lasallians, wouldn't you say that that was up the left kind of side of socialism and the right side of socialism? Or, you know, maybe more clearly we can see with in the Second International how it, you know, splits. You have a center, which is like Kautsky, the right, which maybe could be characterized by Bernstein, and then the revolutionary kind of left, Luxembourg and so forth. So I wonder how you conceive of that. Like, is there a left and right in socialism, or those categories don't seem to make sense? And if not, how?
Okay, thanks. I didn't actually say that we weren't of the left. I mean, I don't think we are, but I didn't say. You know, the point I was making is that we shouldn't concentrate exclusively on. On those who are called the left, the other people who should be open to the socialists here in the socialist case. But if you go back historically, I suppose I'm not sure that they were called left at the time, were they? We were definitely on the revolutionary wing, if you like, of classical social democracy, and we in the early issues of the. Of the Socialist Standard did identify with, you know, various people who regarded as were revolutionaries. You know, people like Rosa Luxemburg, you know, Willem, Liebknecht, and the people in the Geddes in France. The early members of the Socialist Standard do have lots of translations from German and French from people, but of course we soon realised. From the meetings of the Second International, that these social democratic parties weren't really socialists. I mean, they got into an early dispute with Babel because he congratulated the Labour Party on its victory on its election of 40 MPs in the 1906 general election. But of course, these 40 MPs were all elected with liberal support. They were elected in double member constituencies. Where the Liberals put up one candidate and Labour put up the other candidate, so it was nothing to do with socialism. So I suppose whether you call it left and right, I mean, they're, you can draw a distinction, I suppose, between reformists and revolutionaries. But I mean, even the revolutionaries didn't take up our position that you shouldn't advocate the reforms because this was a dangerous prospect. So I think I don't know whether you use the word right wing and left wing in regard to the social democratic movement, but if you did, we would be on the left. But the reason why we don't call ourselves the left today is it's become abundantly clear that most people on the regarded as left stood for state capitalism and not for socialism. Obviously, the people that supported Russia, but also the people who supported the Labour Party and so on. I mean, the Labour Party's Clause 4 is a definition of state capitalism. So, I mean, that's why we wouldn't call ourselves left today, or don't call ourselves left today. But I don't know what Kevin was going to say. I presumably he will say that we probably share some of the views of people that are called right wing, like freedom of speech and not cancelling people and so on. Anyway, that's my answer for the time being. If you want to come back at some stage,
yeah, maybe later I will. Yeah.
Oh, okay, we've got plenty of time, Adam. We've got an hour. Okay, Darren, you're going to tell us what the.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're going to tell us what the Bolshevik tendency are. Yes, we can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I just really want to ask a question first before I kind of make any sort of contribution. It's really, I'm kind of intrigued by the figures. You know, when your party was initially launched and muted, there was the online petition or the online signing up, and I believe the figure was 800,000. I'm kind of curious to know what kind of figures they're talking about now after all this kind of falling out, and like you say, the positive impact of the Greens, the new Green leader, who's obviously touched. Tapped into something, so I'm curious about the numbers, and I'm also, because the cynic in me thinks there's an element of collectivism here. You know, 800,000, and I think Howard in the previous meeting said just by signing up for a mailing list, you're sometimes included in these numbers. And secondly, I'm just curious if anyone has yet stood under your party banner in a local election. You know, I'm obviously don't live in Britain anymore, but I do occasionally follow local elections, and I do see local election results like every week, and I see obviously Reform in the ascendancy in most seats. But I'm curious if even one your party candidate, or even claiming to be a your party, you know, nascent your party representative, is stood, because I'm curious to see what kind of vote they're actually getting if they are standing. Cheers.
Well, they're claiming 53,000 members. That's the number they officially claim. It's clear that quite a few of them must have gone to the Green Party, but just filling in an expression of interest, it's more or less saying I would vote for you, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you would join. Anyway, the figure is let's say 53,000. I think I know of, I've been following local elections as well, and I know of two candidates that stood and said they were supporters of your party. The one was in Leamington Spa, and not a particularly left-wing area. I think she got about 5 or 6% of the vote. And the Green Party would have got 8% or something like that. The other one was more interesting. I can't remember where. It's also in the Midlands somewhere. And it was a local activist who was a member of the SWP. And she did considerably you know better. She got about 20-25% of the vote. And it was interesting. The SWP, Socialist Worker, claimed her first of all as a member of the SWP, but after this fuss about you can't join both parties, they just say described as a sympathiser of SWP. So there have been one or two people standing in by-elections, but in fact the Green Party hasn't been doing all that well in local council by-elections, except in some of the larger metropolitan areas. They've been winning by-elections, local by-elections, in London and Manchester and some places like that, but not all over the place. I mean, they're supposed to be having more people say they'll vote Green than we'll vote for the Labour Party or the Liberal. But that isn't actually taking place in real elections, right? Mike.
Cheers. Thanks. Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm still getting used to a new computer. Yeah, all right, cheers. Yeah.
I can hear you.
Oh, right, cheers. Thanks for that. Thanks as others have said for sort of stepping in at short notice. I haven't really followed your party as much as maybe I should have done. But it's always interesting to sort of learn more. And with what you're saying about activity in the Midlands, that there was an advertised meeting rumoured to be attended by both Zara Sultana and Jeremy Corbyn at a private house not far from Kidderminster, but that was cancelled, and I'm not aware of anything being reorganised there. I'm not sure about the politics of Leamington Spa. It's quite relatively wealthy, I couldn't really comment on sort of tendencies there. But I suppose the point I was going to make, or sort of question I was going to ask, was the impression I get, and as I say, I haven't really followed the sort of development of your parties all that closely, but I get the impression that they're pitching themselves more to people already politicised in a fairly left-wing way, rather than trying to attract support among the general public who maybe aren't as politicised. And I suppose, again, it's sort of natural for them to want to latch on to supporters, which is already likely to be there waiting for an organisation to latch on to, like, sort of disaffected people from the sort of medium to possibly far left there who are, you know, I get the impression sort of waiting the wings for your party or something similar to sort itself out after sort of similar attempts like, you know, Left Unity, these sort of large organisations sort of intending to scoop up various tendencies within the far left. But yeah, I suppose my point was, and you know, I was wondering if others sort of share the perception that they don't seem to be courting support too much from, say, sort of Joe Public or Jane Public, but they haven't had much mainstream media attention which would sort of feed into that. The bits on the mainstream news I've noticed about them has usually been you know, sort of the some of those disagreements between Zara Sultana and Jeremy Corbyn a while back, you know, almost in a sort of quite a gossipy way rather than concentrating on any of their policies. That's the way it seems to have been covered in the mainstream media to myself, and certainly, you know, not much of a sort of proportion of the time compared with the disproportionate amount of time Reform gets on the mainstream media as well. And but yeah, anyway, I'm yeah, so again, it seems to be pitching itself more to the left than to the general public, and I was wondering if people had any thoughts on that. Yeah, cheers, thanks. Yeah,
but the, you know, before your party was formed, they was the idea was that people should stand as independents, and there are some councils and councillors who are elected as, you know, as independents, and they're pretty parochial. I mean, they're saying we represent, I don't know, Preston or somewhere, and you know, in fact, one of them is actually called the Preston Independents. There's another one, isn't, and they got the isn't an independence, and there are even some councils that are controlled by. So these sort of people will be, you know, localists, and the party is saying it's committed to, you know, local, you know, local campaigning, and of course the problem they're going to have, of course, if they're elected, what are they going to do with when the council has to set a budget? Well, they're going to obviously oppose that. So, but I think in fact the sort of people that they're attracting will be already, you know, politically minded. As I say, I notice these older people who must have been, well, probably expelled from the Labour Party, you know, after Corbyn was, you know, blackballed, and maybe even going further back than that to old militant tendency people. And the other factor, of course, is this can be seen as to a certain extent as the political arm of the Palestine movement. I mean, there've been chants of Free Palestine in meetings. Everybody's wearing that. I'm the only one wearing a red scarf. All the others are wearing this, you know, Gaza scarf or Palestine scarf and so on. And I mean, so that it's these sort of people that they've been attracted, which have already been politicized, if you like, by the, you know, by the Gaza war, which is understandable enough for now. They're seeking this as a political expression. But I mean, I think we'll see tomorrow or the next day when they vote on the name. I think, as I said, the choice is probably between the left party and the People's Party. I mean, the People's Party would be ridiculous. That's what the Liberals used to call themselves, but in fact, they probably will commit themselves, you know, to be in the left party, I think. And then we'll see. They obviously, them and the Greens are competing, you know, for the same type of people. But my guess is that the Greens are going to win. But we'll see. In fact, last year there was a council by election in Islington, which we had a candidate actually, and the candidate there was standing as independent, and he was endorsed by Corbyn. He's just announced now that he's joining the Green Party. So even in Islington, people, you know, Corbyn's fiefdom, people are joining, young people are, you know, joining the Green Party. I think actually before that he was in another party called Transform, but nobody's heard of it. But it was another. I mean, that's another sort of name that they can call, you know, the choice of names. They can call themselves Arrive, or they can call themselves the Collective, like the Borg. I don't think they'll you know, they'll choose that one. But I think they will situate themselves as a left, on the left, and they probably will commit themselves in words to commit themselves to the word socialism. Okay, right, Steve.
Yeah, hi everyone. Thanks for having me, first of all. Adam, again, thank you. I think really interesting facts and figures that you've come up with tonight. And I don't think the talk that you've given is too dissimilar to the original one that that was intended. So I think that blended in quite well. You do have to have a chuckle to yourself, don't you, that as you were speaking all the time, I don't know about you guys, but I'm one of those pensioners. But having been about a bit, we do get this awful deja vu moment that we've all been here before, haven't we, in a different form. And what you spoke about, Adam, just really confirmed all that. Before I go any further, and I'll try and keep it short, just to introduce myself, really, so that you don't think there's anything clandestine about why I'm here. I have recently been looking at a lot of stuff from Platypus, as Cumran explained, but I'm here tonight, like anything else, curiosity and seeking clarity never stops, no matter what age you are. I mean, very briefly, my history, a very short one, Labour Party in the early 80s, worked in the pits in the 80s, so I obviously got pretty well involved every day for the strike for 12 months. After that, some people might see as a strange way to go, joined the Revolutionary Communist Party. That went on for a number of years, left it in the early 90s, dropped out of politics, frankly, and then afterwards, as a lot of us tend to do, I suppose, if we call ourselves on the left, gravitated back to my old milieu, which was then, as you're probably mostly aware, Spiked Online, Academy of Ideas, etc., etc., and completely was disowned by them and left them of my own volition through absolute disgust with their trajectory in recent years. And to be honest, disgust at myself in not realising that trajectory early enough. So that's my brief history out of the way. Yes, your party, and I can understand that it's been noted that a lot of people that be attending will be pensioners, but as I say, I'm one of those now. I'm a pensioner too. So we shouldn't just discount it on age. Interesting that Andrew Davis, when he spoke early on about the left and really it's almost irrelevance, it's wokeness, if you like, and that's obviously a fact. And also the never-ending, what I would call, political parasitism of the left on people like the Labour Party and now your party. And it goes on. So from that, though, it does raise a question tonight for me that I'd like to pose to you guys is that political parasitism is pretty obvious again. Again, like I say, it's a very much a repeated deja vu moment on the left. So the question really is, so why are the SPGB attending and giving any sort of credence or attention to your party at all? I really don't understand that. It seems to me akin to what the CPGB did in the early days of Corbynism, when they affiliated themselves loosely or otherwise to the Labour Party. I'd call that political parasitism as well. And they came out with no political gains, and I don't think any members, and I think Mike McNair's openly in public admitted that as such. So that intrigues me again as to why you're interested in your party at all. I mean, are people on the left redeemable in terms of socialism, the task that faces us all, its necessity? Are all these, if we're to believe the figures that Adam came up with, and I'm not disputing them, if all these tens of thousands of people are still operating as they are within a capitalist party, are they redeemable at all for a left, whether they call themselves the left or otherwise? Are they politically redeemable as a left? If they're not, what is the SPGB doing? Align itself or trying to pull members away from that left? I think it's mostly, almost entirely irredeemable. I think that's the problem that a left faces today. So what is the SPGB doing, really, giving credence or any attention to these people? And very finally, the quotes from Zoltana were there. So what is the difference in Zoltana's quotes? And yes, I'd sort of cynically dismiss them all because we've heard it all before, seen it, done it, listened to it. But what is the difference in Zoltana's basic radical points and what the SPGB stands for? So thank you for listening to me going on. I'm still curious.
We actually welcome non-members to these meetings. We wish there were more. So you're most welcome here. Just to take up 3 points about old age pensions. I wasn't saying it's bad, because I think quite a few people here, including myself, are also old age pensioners. And we shouldn't beat ourselves up about this, because if people retire at 60, they've got a good chance of living for at least another 10 years. And they're not all decrepit. We can do all sorts of things, because we've got the free time, which people at work and with families don't have. So I don't see anything wrong with older people, pensioners, taking part in politics. But to come to your more I couldn't say more serious, but other point. I think there's a difference between giving credence to the your party and giving it attention. I mean, looking down the list of people here, some or perhaps most will have, before they joined the SPGB, they will have been a member of the Labour Party or the Communist Party. So, I mean, quite a few of our members have not been irredeemable. You know, I mean, I wasn't in the Labour Party, but I was a teenage Russia lover. I used to listen to Radio Moscow and on the shortwave and so on. So I think a lot of, partly because of the language that we use, you know, capitalist class, class struggle and so on, we're going to appeal to people who already use those words. So what we're doing is, here you've got, 800,000 people who express an interest in politics, and 50,000 of them have joined. So amongst these people, these are people that are interested in political ideas. So we're there to give out leaflets. We've done this with other organisations in the past. We, you know, when the CND movement in the 1960s and again in the 1980s, you know, we were there giving out leaflets on their on their marches and the demonstrations, and it's not the only thing we do. You know, we contest elections, which is an appeal to the general population. I don't think we're giving any credence to the Y Party by leafing them. We're quite honest. We say we don't agree with you. I mean, when we've been outside giving out leaflets and they all go in to member only meetings, they all go in and we're left outside. We don't go in. I mean, we're not doing what the Trotskyists and others are doing, is pretending the way that we support it, you know, and going in and boring from within and so on. We're taking a principled position. We don't agree with you. We think you're wrong, but here's why, and consider our case. Now, the third point you made about these quotes from Sultana, does she mean the same as we mean? I think probably not. She's probably still thinking in terms of nationalisation under workers' control. But I mean, the word she's using and the language she's using is very similar, you know, to what we do. And I think, and this is my personal view, this add some credibility to the word socialist. If other people are talking about it, you know, we can come in and say, okay, there's a discussion on what is socialism. Here's what's been suggested. Here's what we say. But as I said in the talk, I think she's got a better definition of socialism than the Trotskyists, who say, socialism is a transitional society between capitalism and communism. Anyway, I think I don't know if she did agree with our definition of socialism. That would be good, I suppose. But it would come back to Qumran's point. It would bring the position of the new party back to the old social democratic parties, where they were committed to socialism as an aim, but all their practice was campaigning for reforms. All their support was built up on the basis of reforms, not just social reforms, but political democracy as well. So they eventually ceased to be socialist parties. But I don't know. I think it's interesting, probably useful that the word socialism is being debated. Obviously, if it is, we've got something to say. Right, a few more hands up here. I can't remember who was first. Darren. Oh, I think it was Darren. And then anyway, Darren. Hope that answered your point, by the way, Steve. It's Adam.
Yeah, I mean, could I just come? Sorry, yes, Steve, come I might on. Speak. No, I was just going to say, in reply to Steve's point, I disagree with the suggestion that was somehow given by SPGB members going to your party meetings or to even have a meeting on your party, giving out our literature, putting out our political case in opposition to like the left of capitalism somehow gives them credence. I disagree with that, I'm sorry if you get mistaken impression that we maybe like overemphasize our propaganda or activity around the left. The truth of the matter is, as one of the few members of the party who's always been interested in the left, just because that's the way I am. The reality is, I've always been in a minority. Most SPGBers do not consider the most important thing is we've got to recruit from the left. We have to aim our propaganda. I know what you're suggesting. I've seen, from when I lived back in Britain, I would see how the smaller Trotskyist parties, how they'd sort of organise themselves in terms of activity. I could specifically refer to like Spartacus League and maybe Workers' Power how they would completely orientate their activity and their propaganda and agitation not in the generalised class politics, class struggle politics, but basically just in relation to the Socialist Workers' Party or the Militant Tendency, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes I'd see them at close quarters at like various events. And you could see how they were like, it was obviously like a position where it was like, we have to like just try and sort of break off one or two members from these organizations. And they would, with an element of love bombing. And if I was being cynical, I would suggest that Platypus sometimes indulges in that too, because I don't have any experience of Platypus in Britain, but I've seen Platypus in America. I live in America now, and I used to go to various events in New York. Socialist. It used to be called the Socialist Scholars Conference, and then they renamed it. And I would attend that, and the same thing goes on, Again, this idea of orientation to what groups we're oriented to. My experience, I'm not as old as Adam, but I've leafleted Conservative Party meetings. I've leafleted Countryside Alliance meetings. Back in the day, I would leaflet and also make interventions, use that terminology, at the old Revolutionary Communist Party meetings, which they used to hold at University of London Union. So, SPGB, we go to meetings where politics is discussed. We maybe make our case, we make a point, we make the contemporary argument of what's going on right now, and we try and draw parallels with the past, because unfortunately we are seeing a repetition of things. To get back briefly to the business about your party, people have been kind of scoffing at the age thing. I think Adam just raised that because the left, has made a joke of the SPGB for decades about the demographic of the SPGB, and it's just age has caught up with them. So it's like this fascination with youth that the left has always had, which I've always found a bit kind of strange myself, but sort of manipulative. But the very fact that we're seeing a lot of these people, it's basically the same age as ourselves now, that, I just think that's just the observation Adam was making. On the possession of the name, the Your Party, maybe I'm the only one here that sees this, but I honestly just think I'm kind of interested by this. Is it, are they scared of using the S word? Is it because there's too many groups using the S word? There may be an element of that. I think it's also possibly they're looking at the left-wing populism of recent years, like especially in Greece and Spain, and this idea of like repackaging like a left populism. I think it's interesting though looking at that kind of model when you think that both the Greek left populists and the Spanish left populists have actually come a cropper, because when put in a position of power, they've done what every kind of like left-wing capital party has done, which is basically eventually submitted itself to the dictates of the market. You know, this idea that they can some kind of incrementally change the system, or that they've got a sort of a new recipe for like sanitizing capitalism for the working class has been shown to fail. You know, and I don't think myself, maybe because of the electoral system in Britain right now, but also because it has been such a fucking mess, your party, I would just be genuinely surprised if your party was ever in a position that, was it Podemos in Spain never got to, or Syriza, I apologize for pronunciation, in Greece. I just don't think they've got the opportunity. I still think if Corbyn could have joined the Labour, been reunited to the Labour Party tomorrow, he would have done it. I honestly think, Corbyn just kind of bounced into this a wee bit. You know, I just don't think he has the enthusiasm. And I think, unfortunately, the 100,000 signatories or the 50,000 members, I think so many, such a high percentage of them are bound up with Corbynism. You know, they just happened. I'm not suggesting it's a cult, but there's definitely like an admiration for Corbyn, a bit like Sanders in America, I guess. Where Jeremy goes, I was going to go. You know, I'm not saying it's, you know, slavish adoration, but I just think that's essentially what makes up a lot of these people. And I think if and when Corbyn sort of steps down from politics, I think a lot of these people are not going to sustain your party as an organisation. So, sorry, contribution's a bit too long, so I'll stop there. Thank you.
Understand how these hands are. I'll just take them in the order they are. So, Howard, you're the top of my list here on my screen.
Okay, Darren, I've been losing the will, but some good points there anyway. Listen, I won't talk for long. Just to say that Steve, that he's opened this up really well. Well done. Congratulations. As I say, you really opened it up. Sorry, I've almost forgotten what the points I was going to make. But anyway, one point I was going to make was this, that it's interesting that you've taken up what Adam said about these definitions of these explanations by Zara Sultan of what her party, her organisation, I'll call them YP, were after. And they're very good, actually. I mean, they could easily, the socialist, SPGB website, on its front page, has always got a sort of snippet. They change every few days, and the snippet is to do with something that's going on at the moment. They could easily, and they're very short, they're only about 120 words long, which is about the length of those comments by Sultan. They could easily go on, and we could say, yes, that's what we stand for. But the proof of the pudding's in the eating. And when, as people have said, when other organisations have said this in the past, it's simply been there and hasn't really influenced their attitude when it actually came to some kind of practice. So I think, yes, we can agree with quite a few of the things that people in YP say and people in other left-wing organisations. But when it comes to the nitty-gritty, to what socialism means and the kind of society we're looking for, you won't find much of that in their publicity, in what they say, in their meetings, etc., etc. So, yes, okay, I think there probably are people in these organisations who, if they knew about us, would be inclined to come towards us. So it's worth our while doing a bit of, if you like, propagandising with them. But on the other hand, you know, as other people have said, they're not the only organisations we put our case to. We try to put our case more generally. The other thing I was going to say was, yeah, I mean, you've been on a real sort of political odyssey, I hear, Steve, haven't you? You know, from one organisation to another. And I'm absolutely delighted that you quickly saw through Spiked and Co. Absolutely lamentable lot. And, you know, anyone who sort of, you know, moved from any other organisation to them should quickly realise that they're aligning themselves with a lot who are sort of, you know, very, very much, who stand for very, very much the opposite of what we as socialists stand for. They talk about free speech, but in the final analysis, you know, they equate free speech with any kind of nonsense that will sort of get people worked up about immigrants or anything of that description. Okay, I've been going on for a long time now, so I'll stop there.
Well, the next name down is you, Andy.
He took a telephone call, didn't he?
Okay, well, that's who else we have. It looks as if it's Steve again, next one, I think. And then Steve. Steve, you're on again.
Are you sure there's two other guys? I've spoken once. I don't mind waiting.
You've spoken once. And they seem to have left Adam, the room.
Adam, I think you will find that I was next to speak.
Okay, you speak next if you want to.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Tap. Yeah, I mean, substantially, I mean, it's, yeah, really pleased that Steve Robertson brought up sort of various points and legitimate points. And I certainly don't intend going on at any length of time about it. Because when you say, I think, perhaps not word for word, Steve, but in terms of heard it all before, you're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. We've heard a lot of this before from these types of individuals and, you know, taking into account Liverpool. I remember people like Derek Hatton, for example, you know, was another one that came across as sort of left-wing and described himself as socialist. And I think of others like Peter Taff and Ted Grant and such like. You know, the party has dealt with these individuals over many, many years at the time when they were in the spotlight. And I would beg to suggest to you, or I do suggest to you, that one of the reasons we do feel compelled to try and influence the supporters of these other organisations is to show them, you know, what we believe socialism to be. Now, if we just let it go, if we just let it go and didn't contend with them on their interpretation of their thinking of what socialism is, these organisations and these other people actually make it quite difficult for us at times in the SPGB to persuade them otherwise. So it is a task that, irrespective of whether they're on the left or the right, though, if we, the SPGB, don't go out to try and propagate the case for socialism, it's not going to be terribly helpful. All we're trying to do is facilitate to a large extent to give socialism sooner rather than later. And I'll give you an example. I heard you say earlier on, I think you were working in the mines, you're working down the pits at one time. Yeah, I can see you nodding there. And this year at the party had a stall up at the Durham Miners Gala. I don't know if you've ever attended that or not. And it's an absolutely magnificent opportunity amongst other opportunities, but the Durham Miners' Gala, there were about 120,000 people there. It gave us a golden opportunity to go and try and spread the socialist case. So, in effect, I think what we're saying is that if we don't go out and show these individuals for what they are, and on many occasions, their dishonesty, and they are being dishonest. And I recall some weeks back when there was a New Party article on Facebook, and I commented on it, and the Socialist Party actually had it, that the New Party were actually being dishonest. When I pointed out to them that they're saying one thing but actually doing another. No wonder people get so disillusioned. So really, I think what we in the Socialist Party try and do is seek to ensure that our case is put forward, and if any of these organisations ever want to debate with us, then let them come along and debate with us on it. Some of them run miles now, because they know they cannot defeat the Socialist Party's case. So, but thanks for your contribution anyway, Steve. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Well, I see. Right, we'll start again. So it'll be Andy, Steve, and then Steve. So, Andy, you're on. Are you there, Andy? I can see you.
I thought that Steve Finch was before me, but...
Well, okay, you were there and you disappeared and you've now come back.
So all right, fair enough. Okay. Well, I'd just like to say hello to Steve Roberts. Thanks for coming to our meeting. And what you had to say was very interesting, actually. And I'll keep this brief, but some of what you said really resonated with me. I mean, we all have different life experiences, but... in my younger days, I was a supporter at one time of the then Frank Faraday-led Revolutionary Communist Party, and also sort of not exactly at the same time, but sort of fairly closely after becoming incredibly disillusioned with that group, having sort of asked questions that they didn't like about their internal democracy and all that type of thing, and what their expectations of, you know, they wanted me to become a member, basically, and I was very resistant. And then I was courted by Frank Faraday's former comrade, David Yaffe, and his group, the Revolutionary Communist Group, to go along to their... meetings, and they even invited me to their house, you know, the Yappies. But I wasn't going to have any truck with them either. And I just gave up on this whole idea of these left-wing groups, these revolutionary left-wing groups. I mean, they were all managed by some sort of, you know, allegedly charismatic leadership, you know, and who have this sort of priestly authority and so on. And I just gave up on all of it. And I was in a cafe bookshop in Birmingham one day, and there happened to be a copy of the Socialist Standard there. I didn't know anything about the Socialist Party of Great Britain. And I picked this little journal up and read it over a cup of coffee. And suddenly I just thought, this makes sense. This makes absolute sense. And I can also tell you that in those days, it was really very difficult to be accepted as a member to the Socialist Party of Great Britain. It was nothing like signing up and saying, I'm interested in the Green Party or I'm interested in your party. They gave me hell before they let me become a member. But it was well worth it. So, you know, that's all I'm trying to just say. I'm not trying to influence you in any way or another, but that's the way it was for me. And I've never really regretted that. So, yeah. All right. So it's really nice to have you at our meeting, and I hope you'll come to some more of them. Thanks, Steve.
It's not often we've got two ex-members of the RCP. Anyway, Steve.
Adam, I was never a member. I just want to make that clear.
Okay. Yeah. Again, thank you all for being so friendly tonight. It's probably been a little bit of a shock to you all, but that's great that you've done it in a comradely manner. And I've listened, and I like. I'm almost sure you tend to make judgment when you get to a mature age, and I'm almost sure that what I'm hearing tonight is not typical on the left. I think a lot of what I've heard is in good faith. Most of you seem convinced that you're on the correct path, and that's fine. And as I said, I'm like most old dogs, willing to learn new tricks. So that again, that's why one of the reasons I'm here tonight. I didn't want to give the impression that I was trying to question just your strategy and tactics, which seems to have come across in some of the replies to what I've said. I always think that's problematic because we should put the politics first, not the other way around. And to address the politics of, let's just call them the left. So if we're addressing the politics of the left, be it in your party or the Labour Party, etc., etc., what are they? What have they achieved in the last 100 years? And why are they still considered worthy of any sort of attention? And to go back once again to the numbers, as an indication of this, I'm trying to be quite blunt here to make the point. Adam mentioned figures of between 500,000 and 800,000 so-called socialists, leftists. I think if ever there was 5,000 committed proletarian socialists in this country, we may very well be seeing the beginning of a critical mass, and we all know what that means. Well, when we're talking about potentially 800,000 self-aggrandizing, self-declaring socialists, I think we can see that the size of that problem is not worthy of our attention. That's how I see it. In terms of, yes, people here, including myself, have been pulled away from some aspects of the left to another. It's extremely minimal, extremely minimal. Let's be all perfectly honest about that. And I think there's a little bit, I'm trying not to be rude. I think there's a little bit of naivety here in what's been said in replying to me. Does anybody seriously think that all these people on the left that regard themselves as socialist have not read all the books, read what you've read, possibly more than you've read, know all the terminology, know the history? Okay, they've interpreted it differently and wrongly, likely so. But it's not that they lack an education at all. And I don't think no influence from the SPGB would turn those people at all. I think it's naive to think so. They are, unfortunately, almost all of them, dyed in the wool. We call them leftists, and to get back to the title of the intended discussion, but are they of the right? Sorry, that's a big question to throw in there, but I think it's very pertinent, and I think it's important. And finally, I don't want to come across as dogmatic, because people say you're just writing all the left off. In essence, I am to a large extent, but I've got the greatest respect for anyone that I judge to be open-minded and objective and wanting to learn. My experience over more than 4 decades is the people I've been talking about tonight are not that at all. The minds are closed. They've set their life, their social life, their political life on the road that they've gone down. And for me, that does mean that most of them are irredeemable. It's a fact in history where we are, if it's a specific point in history, And that while there may be 800 so-called socialists, there's many, many millions of more people out there that aren't, and I think are potentially worth more attention than most of the left. Okay, again, I've rattled on. Thanks again for the time.
Okay, thanks. But Kevin will be giving his talk in December or January, so you will hear the original talk at some point. Right, we'll come back to it in a minute. Steve, do you want to say something?
Thanks, Steve. That's interesting what you've said. I just want to make sure that you're aware of what I think is one of the major differences between ourselves and some of these people that RCP, CPGB, etc. One of the big differences between us and them is that they think that the working class, our fellow workers, are incapable of understanding their own economic interests in getting rid of capitalism. This is a position that they've taken up since Lenin, who said that workers can only ever gain trade union consciousness. So what we object entirely, I mean, as members of the working class ourselves, we obviously object entirely to that because we think that we can understand how capitalism works against our interests and why we need to get rid of commodity production and all of the accessories to the capitalist system. And it's vital that the working class is able to understand these things, because the type of society that we're after is one of free access to whatever society can produce. And that means that there will be no form of economic coercion possible on anybody. It's a completely voluntaristic society. What once you leave aside the obvious condition that human beings must work in order to produce the things that we need to live. So we've got a gigantic difference with these people, and for that reason, what is our aim? Our aim is abolishing the wages system, abolishing commodity production, so that everyone has free access to this, to the wealth that society can produce. Yeah, major difference. The next major difference that we have for these people is that we hold that we can never ever act in a reformist way. We can never ever put forward claims, ideas like tax the rich or nationalize the water industry. We will not try to attract support on what are basically little tinkerings with capitalism. And by the way, by tinkering with capitalism, we include nationalisation, because capitalism is a worldwide society, and we have to overthrow it democratically on a worldwide basis. And these people that you're talking about as irredeemably lost, I'm not so sure that they are, but this is the type of mindset that they've got. The mindset of people that support reform and people like that, unfortunately, is even more imbued with capitalist ideology. But that's the thing that we're up against, and we do of course realise, we've been at this for quite a while, Steve. We do realise the enormity of the task. So anyway, thank you for your attendance and thank you for your contribution.
Okay, Paddy, I think you're next.
I just wanted to say, not to gang up on Stephen, but because he raised an interesting point, Does one bother with people on the left? Are they a waste of space? Are they just no-hopers? I mean, of course, they'd say that about us as well, wouldn't they? You know, and a lot of us here are pensioners. We don't think we're bigoted. If somebody comes along with a better idea, I think most of us here would say, well, we'll go with it, you know, as long as it's a better idea and it's well expressed. You know, we're not set in our ways. We don't see particularly why other people should be either. And this, but what this gets down to is, I mean, you've raised a question that has often been asked in our organisation over the years. I've heard it any number of times, and it's the question of who do you target? And there isn't a right or wrong answer to this. What you've said, Steve, isn't wrong. It's certainly one view, but the proposition, and I think most of us realise that the proposition comes down to this: is it going to be easier to try and reach people who don't follow politics, don't know anything about politics, have no interest in it, don't believe they can influence anything in the world? That's a huge abyss for them and us to meet across. Or is it better to go for people who do at least think about politics, who care about issues, who are at home with the language and the protocols of debate, and who may have some sort of large-scale picture, even if we don't agree with it, of some kind of post-capitalist future? Which of those two groups, and one of those is a very large majority and one's a fairly small minority, which do we as a small party have the most chance of influencing? And we've generally gone for the smaller group, that are the second group. But I mean, I can certainly understand why you would take the view that you do. I think we're perhaps more hopeful. I wouldn't say naive. I think if you look at the general success of left-wing parties of all stripes, none of them have particularly accomplished anything. And in fact, the one thing we can say that we have accomplished is we've outlived most of them. So, yeah, I wouldn't say naive. I think more hopeful than that. But, you know, we continue to operate. We go to these things. We give out leaflets, not necessarily expecting that much, but hoping that, you know, some of the time somebody will be interested and, like you, come and ask us questions. And that's... And have a discussion, and that's how we proceed. Thank you.
Right, we've got. Do you want to come back, Steve, or lots of people want to talk here? Okay. Well, Andy was first, then Steve, then Darren. Okay.
Quickly. just very quickly. Actually, I would gently push back on Paddy's point there. In that I'm not sure that's always the case. I think people come to a point of view about what capitalism is doing to them in their life, and they realise this system is wrong. It's not right. Somehow there must be something better than this, and they are not necessarily able to put that into some, you know, verbiage that understands leftist or socialistic language, but they just know it inherently because they're exploited by the system. So I just gently push back a little on Paddy there, and hopefully that also demonstrates the way that we operate in the party and that all members are equal. So thanks for that. Cheers.
Okay, Steve again. You're on.
Yeah, I have used quite provocative terms and sort of thrown a grenade in there, but I think it's been in good faith, and I think it sometimes works to get at people's reactions. I'm glad that I think I've achieved that partially, at least tonight. And I think Paddy did encapsulate very well the differences. I don't think it is just strategy and tactics, though. I think it is a political problem. At source, it is a political problem. The left, let's be honest, the left in all its varieties, and you don't need me to tell you what those are, in all its varieties for more than a century, has been done it in all shapes and forms. And let's be quite frank, totally and utterly failed. Now, people can turn around and blame the working class about consciousness, but it really is time that a group of people who are socialists understand the failures of the left. And we have to, it's absolutely necessary to understand that they are very much a part of the problem. And yes, I have to say, the very mass of people out there that today may be conservative, apolitical, unaligned, have far more potential than the left. Again, that's extremely provocative. It's what I think is correct because of the left's failure. I'll give you just one anecdote. I always remember going back to our strike, and clearly on every picket line, and I did one every day and very much more as well, the left was there in all its shapes and forms. And what came across to me as a young man even then is that in many respects, ordinary working folk, especially those in struggle, understand far more than the left. And I remember guys that never attended union meetings, that stood with me and others every day, went out, got the schools blasted apart, the whole thing that we had to face from the state, very often turned round to the left and said, look, we're doing the fighting here. We've always been prepared to fight. The working class has always fought, but we clearly haven't got the tools, meaning political tools and understanding. In other words, the message to the left was, don't come here telling me what I know. I want to know what I don't know. And this is a failure of the left. Its own failed understanding of what's necessary to transform society. And that's why I'm so, if you like, disrespectful and completely hopeless in terms of seeing a future in these 500,000 to 800,000 people.
Some of our members might agree with your analysis, actually. Anyway, Darren is the next speaker, and then Richard.
All right, I promise I'll keep this very brief, and I'll try to be polite. Both Steve and Quillam, Steve's a supporter of Platypus, and Quillam's, I believe, apologise for mispronouncing the name, apologise, supporter of a member of Platypus. I would throw it back at them. I would ask, what is your activity? Because the public face that I see of Platypus, and it's kind of ironic in light of what Steve has just been saying, is a pushback towards us. And I think he's misunderstood our position with respect. It's to organise panel of discussions of leftists. You know, I just quickly had a quick look at the website, and it was, you know, just there the new, and it's very reminiscent of every other time I've either saw the Platypus Review or looked at the website or been in the around universities. And it's organising panels of leftists, usually moderated by a member of Platypus. And I'm curious, you know, if the left is, you know, your main bone of contention in this meeting is the misunderstanding that we're somehow overly interested in this 500,000 to 800,000. But it seems a central plank of Platypus's operation, and this has been my experience of Platypus as long as I've known it, which is a number of years now, is organising, moderating, you know, these panel discussions. And obviously from these, I guess, you know, I'm just speculating here, you can somehow kind of draw out, you know, those inconsistencies of those groups as a means to, like, you know, for want of a better expression, expose them, you know. So it seems to me that Platypus has a far greater interest in the left and in dealing with the left than the SPGB. And it kind of begs the question, and, you know, just a genuine, honest question to throw out here. Is Quinn and Steve, is this all about the issue of leadership of the working class? you know, the failures of the left. You know, I believe Chris Cachone's, one of his more popular articles was, you know, the left is dead. So I apologize, I'm paraphrasing. You know, and obviously, because Cachone comes from a Spartacus background, you know, I'm just curious if this is all about leadership, just the wrong leadership has been in place. You know, Steve just recounted the anecdote about, you know, workers on the picket line during the 84-85 strike, you know, and how they were more class conscious, you know, more political aware in their own way. And it's almost like it's implied what was lacking there was the wrong leadership, the wrong left. So are you putting yourselves forward as a correct left? Because that's something that we obviously do not do. We are not putting ourselves forward as leaders. And we've been dismissed. We've been ridiculed for that for over 100 years, a small party of good boys. Because we've always argued the emancipation of the working class, you know, emancipation of working class is the work of the working class itself. And we've meant that. We mean that. And I don't think the left, even the soft left, like the Corbynites, truly mean that. It's all about we had the wrong leaders. We need the right leaders. You know, so that's just a few questions that have arisen out of your contributions. Cheers. Thanks.
Right. Richard.
Okay. Hi. I really enjoyed Steve's contributions tonight because I think it actually has risen, has brought up a slew of issues for me. For my activity these days, I mean, most of my activity is really local here to where I live. And I go along to a lot of groups here, a lot of political groups. I've been along to a couple of the sort of your party stuff and a whole load of other stuff recently. And I think there is a misunderstanding possibly that Steve has of what we're doing, because I'm just going to speak personally for me. I go along to these groups not because I want to talk to the party hacks. I don't want to go there and talk to sort of people who have sort of dedicated themselves to leftist politics over a long period. What I go for is because I meet a lot of people there, quite a lot of people who don't, as I think to use Steve's phrase, who haven't read the books, who are there very often because of some kind of moral impulse. And they're going along to these groups and they're becoming part of these groups because these are the groups that they've actually heard about on the media and that they are in themselves seeking some way forward. And the reason that I go is because I do find that among these people who go along to these groups, there are individuals who are willing to listen and interested in listening to another point of view, not a kind of standard reformist leftist point of view. And because fundamentally, I mean, as Darren was saying, I mean, we have fundamentally based our position on the view that the working class can and will understand eventually, you know, sort of their position within the nature of capitalism. Because I think vast numbers of people that I come into contact with, when I'm not no longer working, but when I was working, you know, you could go along and stand around the water cooler and talk to people. And there were people who fundamentally understood that they were being conned, but they just didn't quite understand how. They couldn't actually they couldn't actually define what was wrong, but they just knew that there was something was wrong. And so for me, it's those people that I feel that I want to reach and that I would spend my time trying to reach. Some of those people I find in, you know, I used to find in work or down the pub. Some of them I find attending these meetings by left-wing groups. I think it's valuable from my point of view to go along to talk to them and find them wherever they can be found. When they go along to these groups, as I said earlier, many of them have some sort of have a moral commitment, have an outrage at the sort of the world in which they're living in, and they are looking for explanations. So that's the place that I would find to go, because as a party for 120 odd years, we have kind of been absolutely taking the view that the left and the right are the wings of capitalism, and that reformism is no solution to the problems of the working class within the society. So I think that if I'm sorry, I'm going on now, but just to sum up what I'm saying, I'm prepared to find people who are willing to listen wherever they are, and sometimes in sort of groups like parties like your party, you will find them. So that's why I go along to those kind of organisations. Okay, so, but no, sorry, I see your notes, Steve. Absolutely, no, thank you very much for your contribution. I think it's valuable in that it's actually has raised these issues, sort of, which from time to time we do need to to address among ourselves and to clarify our thinking. So, yeah, no, much appreciated. Okay, thank you.
All right, somebody with the initials JC wants to speak. I take it it's not Jeremy Corbyn. Anyway, John.
No, no, not Jeremy. No, I just wanted to say, arising from what Richard said about, I think he was really referring to uncommitted people who might attend some of these left-wing meetings. And when we engage with the left wing, we do hope to persuade them of the error of their ways, but we do recognise that a lot of them have grown old and seem to have learned nothing. The same people who sneered at us when we were young because we had old members, now we've all grown old. Some of them have stayed with their left wingery and don't appear to have learned much. Well, one good thing about growing old is that if you have not learned anything during the whole of your long life, the gravedigger will sort you out, and we can leave it to future generations. The young people who, when I was young, I thought young people were the hope for the future. Now that I'm old, I still think the same, only because they're still going to be here when we are not. So that's an important thing to recognise, a practical detail. But the one thing the left wing has achieved is to spread confusion. Spread confusion about socialism. They don't know what it is. As far as we are concerned, socialism is properly understood as laid out by us in our long history. We've published the Socialist Standard non-stop since 1904, and our main object all of that time is to push the case for world socialism and nothing but, not to engage in silly reforms, tinkering about the edges of capitalism, but to organise to bring about the world for the workers. It's a simple objective. It's not all these so-called immediate demands which end up becoming your whole life's work. And, you know, you end up becoming indistinguishable from the other parties of capitalism. So I think it would be a mistake to think that we have some special relationship with the left. It's only that they use some of the jargon that we use, but we think they use it wrongly. And so therefore, quite often, these left-wing organisations are our deadly enemies, just like the Tory party is, just like nationalism, religious superstition, and all these absurd ideas. So we try to engage with anyone, but we do recognise the fact that some people are committed to a certain point of view, like members of the Labour Party, some councillors I knew in Glasgow, one of whom seemed to agree with our position, and he said the reason he wouldn't join us would be because all his friends were in the Labour Party, he'd been in the Labour Party his whole life, and therefore what would he do? He couldn't just leave that. And I can understand how someone could take that point of view, but you know, we're not interested in people who are found themselves committed from that point of view. We might have discussions with them, but the people we're interested in are the vast majority who have not even heard the case for socialism. They don't even know what socialism is. But capitalism forces them to recognise that there's something wrong. Even just in simple terms, the vast majority of workers know that they're being ripped off. They just don't necessarily understand the ins and outs of it, the whole mechanism by which it's done. You know, they believe in nonsense like a fair day's wage for a fair day's work. Well, we don't believe in that sort of nonsense. We would argue that that the working class is robbed at the point of production, where you're producing the wealth of society as a class, the capitalist class is ripping you off. And therefore, to tinker with capitalism like all these parties do, whether they call themselves left, right, centre, or something else, the fact is they're all ultimately leaving the capitalist system intact. And what we are trying to do is overthrow it. We've been trying to do that for over 120 years as a party. And all we're trying to do is encourage other workers to join us in that aim. We're not blaming anyone for not understanding. We do blame people for being dishonest, as many of the people on the left, right and centre, whatever that is. All the parties of capitalism feel the need to mislead in some way or another. A lot of them bang on about leadership. As has already been pointed out, we have no leaders. We don't need people to do our eating, sleeping, fucking for us. So why would we need somebody to lead us? It's just this concept of a person who's a leader in all things is just insane from our point of view. And consequently, we oppose it at every chance we get. Now, that might seem naive and strange, but stranger things have happened. Ideas which at one time were only held by a handful of people came to become the dominant ideas. But sometimes there's no guarantee of being right as being that helpful to you in your existence, because you can be right, but it might just be that people are not going to accept how right you are for perhaps another couple of hundred years. That's what happened with the understanding of the world, the planet's going around the sun and not the other way about. That took a couple of hundred years before people could accept what in actual fact was always true. So we take heart from the fact that people can change, not fast enough. When I was 15, I knew that the people around me were not the stuff of which revolutions were made. I knew I would not see socialism. But the one thing that I'm gratified with is that people like me and you, all of us here, one day will overthrow this system. So that's the hope for the future. Thanks. I know I've gone on a bit longer than I intended, but anyway, there you are. Thanks.
That's all right. Thanks. Well, normally we do finish at 9 o'clock, but I think we've exhausted the subject. And if you're following the newspapers on the radio and the television over the weekend, you'll have some understanding of what it's about, hopefully. And we've obviously got to say something about the comrades are going to be there in Liverpool handing out leaflets to the people who will be there tomorrow morning and on Sunday. So unless anybody has something they really want to say, we can close this meeting. I think that come to think of it, we haven't got a speaker for next week. It's going to be have you heard the news? So I don't know what the news will be, but maybe we can just wing it next week, or unless somebody wants to volunteer to do it. But we will be meeting again next Friday at 7 o'clock in the same cyber place. Okay, then. I'll declare the meeting over, I think.
7:30, Adam, not 7 o'clock. 7:30.
7:30. Okay, 7:30 next week.